Good morning. I'm Deborah Potter reporting on the CBS World News Roundup. Little progress and no truce. The disappointing results of a day-long effort for peace in El Salvador. The government and the rebels promised to meet again, but as we hear from John Sisolof, that's about all.
The talks had barely wound up last night after a marathon 12 hours of negotiations when the two sides began taking pot shots at one another. Rebel commander Facundo Guardado, a participant in the talks, took to the airwaves to say Duarte's government was a government of unemployment, inequality, and repression. President Duarte, who did not attend the talks, countered with his own televised statement, calling Guardado's speech a tirade and rejecting out of hand a detailed proposal for peace just put forth by the rebels. With such evident ill feeling, the surprising element about this second round of talks is that it happened at all, and that rebel and government representatives agreed to keep on meeting. The one concrete result of the get-together, held in the Catholic Retreat Center of Ayagualo, was the two sides shook hands on allowing the free movement of traffic for 2 weeks over the Christmas holidays. Peace is still distant for the Salvadoran people, but this month may bring a brief lull in the fighting. John Sisolof for CBS News, San Salvador.
The man with the mechanical heart is resting this morning after a couple of trial runs with the power supply that doctors hope will free him from his hospital room. Betsy Lewis of CBS affiliate WCII in Louisville has more.
William Schrader's plastic heart pumped steadily off power from a portable battery pack for 22 minutes during the first trial run yesterday morning and for an hour during the second test last night. Doctors will gradually increase the time Schrader spends on the portable system during the next few days, although the Food and Drug Administration approved the portable driver for 3 hours maximum. Dr. Alan Lansing, head of the Humana Heart Institute, says while Schrader adjusts to the portable unit, he'll also have to deal with a problem common to most open-heart surgery patients. He calls it the BLOD.
This consists of a period of time when they do feel tired, miserable, they ache all over, and they actually become weepy. And they start at the stage, I wish I'd never done this.
Lansing says the BLOS usually run their course in about 36 hours. Schrader's doctors and his family are anxious for him to have his first interview with the media, but Lansing says that may be several days away. Betsy Lewis for CBS News, Louisville.
President Reagan took his budget papers up to Camp David this weekend, still trying to decide just how to go about cutting the federal deficit next year, now estimated at more than $200 billion. Aides say he's made a tentative decision to hold overall spending to this year's total. But so far, he hasn't looked at defense, which is expected to cost more.
This is Neil Strauser on Capitol Hill. The freeze concept has been growing in popularity on Capitol Hill, in part because in political terms, it's a relatively painless way of budget cutting. An across-the-board freeze would have the effect of cutting every program, popular or unpopular, by the same amount in real terms, by the amount of inflation in each year. If inflation is 4% and the appropriation for low-income energy assistance, for example, is kept the same, poor families could buy about 4% less heat. But the freeze only appeals if everyone is hurt. And even many Republicans fear that President Reagan's idea of a freeze would exempt defense to a great degree and some other programs. So the pain would be greater for some than for others. The pressure is likely to grow on the president for deeper defense cuts. And in the meantime, as House Republican leader Bob Michael emphasizes, the freeze talk is all tentative.
I don't think any members on our side are yet in a position to make that flat-out commitment.
Neil Strauser, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Defense spending is the key issue in Japan today as the new parliament goes into session. Barbara Slavin tells us what's at stake.
8 years ago, Japan decided to limit its defense spending to 1% of its gross national product. That limit has become a psychological as well as a financial barrier the Nakasone government would like to break. No one is talking about any major rearmament. The Japanese are quite happy remaining an economic rather than a military superpower. But officials would like to come closer to their goal of being able to defend the Japanese islands and adjacent sea lanes against small-scale conventional aggression. A consensus toward bigger defense spending has been growing in the ruling Liberal Democratic Party. In an interview, a defense agency official traced this trend back to the fall of Saigon, when, he said, the Japanese realized the United States could no longer serve as the policeman of Asia, let alone the world. But improvement in Japanese defenses has been slow in coming. Only next year, for example, will Japan finally begin to replace its 20-year-old anti-aircraft batteries. Steady increases in defense spending may be politically hard to sustain at a time when the Nakasone government, like the Reagan administration, is trying to limit other domestic spending. Barbara Slavin for CBS News, Tokyo.
It's crash and burn on purpose in the Mojave Desert today. The government's conducting a test to see if there's a way to lessen the danger of fire in a plane crash, deliberately wrecking an unmanned airliner in a $12 million experiment. The story from Beach Rogers of CBS station KNX in Los Angeles.
The aging four-engine Boeing 720 is flown by a pilot and a flight engineer on the ground using a television monitor. A camera is installed in the aircraft's nose. NASA spokesman Les Reinertsen at Edwards Air Force Base says the prime objective is to test the effectiveness of a new anti-misting fuel additive designed to prevent a major fire after a jetliner crash.
In order to do that, we've taken a lot of steps to ensure that we will get wing rupturing, fuel leakage, ignition sources to cause the fuel to ignite, and so that when we're finished with this, we'll have a valid test so that scientists can take a look at this and see if this makes sense for future aircraft.
Reinertsen says several obstructions, including 12 breakaway approach light poles like those at airports, have been installed. The aircraft carries six dozen lifelike dummies, many of them instrumented to record what happens to them. The crash is the culmination of 12 years of planning. Beach Rogers for CBS News, Los Angeles.
It's buckle up in New York today. The first mandatory seatbelt law in the nation is now in effect. The story from Peter Kane of station WCBS.
The law took effect this morning, but New York State authorities say they won't be imposing any fines for another month. Warnings will suffice until then. Even after full enforcement begins, Joan Palo of the State Motor Vehicle Department says many motorists will get the benefit of the doubt at first.
We will not be pulling people over into seatbelt checkpoints as we do for DWI. But in the future, if we see that people are not complying, we will have much stricter enforcement.
Either way, Norma Rollins of the New York Civil Liberties Union has a problem with the new law.
It's just as if they would have passed a law that said we can't smoke because smoking will make us not healthy. I think the government is really trying to regulate us in keeping ourselves healthy and ourselves well and ourselves safe, which is not the role that the government should be taking.
Rollins says she usually doesn't wear a seatbelt. Now that it's against the law, she says she probably will, but she'll resent it. Peter Kane for CBS News, New York.
It's 10 minutes past the hour.